Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
I'm Mouse Jones.
I'm Nat Wilds.
I'm Fly Ra.
And we are
Life Next Door.
Welcome back. Shout out to the neighborhood and all of our lovely neighbors. We appreciate y'all. You know, we've been doing the analytics and we have seen that. Me, I was wrong the whole time. I've been saying all this time that it is 95% women, 5% men. Ryan let me know this week that we have 50-50 listeners.
But it's to your point. It has changed over the years. It used to be
It used to be crazy. It used to be beautiful.
Don't forget that live show. Don't forget that live show.
First of all, 150,000 women. It was two men.
Two.
So, 50,000 is crazy.
And we invited the two men. I'm not.
So when we get back outside, let's not change that community.
Keep
y'all
that energy.
Can stay home.
Keep that energy.
We don't need y'all to come. Just keep listening.
That's a fact.
There's that. Make sure that no matter what y'all do, you subscribe, comment, and rate, okay? If you're listening on Apple Podcasts, leave us a 5-star rating.
Yes,
and let us know what you think in the comment section. You're going to ask me why a 5-star rating? Because we're narcissistic, and you have not because you ask not. Mm. That's what the Bible says. So I'm asking for the 5-star, okay? I'm asking for a nice comment because we're children, and we need validation. We need to know that we're doing something right. And make sure, listen, I'm only going to say this once and one time this time. Okay, if you are Hakeem Campbell, Kimmy Gibbler, cut the shit, okay? Stop mooching, okay? Y'all get 2 episodes per week for the price of none. The least you could do is take your cheap ass to the Patreon, go to patreon.com/guysnextdoorpod and become a goddamn Patreon.
Please.
That's you. Put a little snap on the Petro.
That's it.
We got exclusive content over there. You get to see our face over there. You get what I'm saying? Do the right thing. Go over there. Stop eating off our couch for free. You feel
exactly
what I'm saying? And last but not least, make sure that if you got to listen to letter, you send it to guysnextdoor123@gmail.com. That's guysnextdoor123@gmail.com. And listen, if you want that letter read on air, put your own fake name in the subject line, or Che's going to read what's in front of her.
Oh, yeah. Very Ron Burgundy style.
Also, if it is a relationship question, does not have to be, but if it is a relationship question, make sure you send a picture of yourself and the suitors. Okay, I also put the S in there because I know y'all be creeping out.
They be out here wilding. They be out here wilding.
And it's all important because I'm a visual person, so I never want to give fat people advice to a skinny person, and I never want to give ugly advice to a good-looking person. You
got
to keep the balance, so help me, help you, help us. Now let's get into this episode. Listen, we have, in the pandemic, we have all been listening to a lot more things and, you know, have a lot more time to explore things. So sometimes, you know, in the group chat, Mac will be like, yo, look at this workout video. Mm-hmm. Look at this. Mm-hmm. Look at this movie. Look at this script. Ryan will be like, yo, look at this. Look at this. And we'll all share different things. So me being the podcast head I am, I'm always listening to different news things and love what NPR does with the Tiny Desk and all that.
200%.
And so I was listening to Up First. Wow, I'm giving like two promos, right? So I was listening to Up First, and there was a ad for like the music came in and this real deep voice came over.
Booming. Like booming even. And, yeah.
And yo, y'all had to hear that ad, son. It's the morning time. So Up First, it drops in the morning. So it's the first, I'm listening on my workout or whatever I'm doing. And just out of nowhere, you just hear this voice like, in hip hop. I said, oh.
In hip hop.
Is that Barry White? Is that you? I said, God, you know I listen to hip hop? Oh, man. So I was like, so the podcast was called Louder Than the Riot. And off rip, they do a good job of, with podcasting, it's all about balance. It's all about voice. I'm always into it bigger than what we're just hearing, right? Mm-hmm. So to hear this deep voice and then hear this soft, assertive voice right next to it, I was like, wait, what the hell is going on here?
It was giving me very like Q-Tip Fife like vibes. Yes. Like the way that they vibed off of each other.
It's almost okay, and that's how I felt.
It felt like
a hip hop group. So I'm like, wait, what's in this? So the name of the podcast was Louder Than the Riot. And I listened to the first episode and I was hooked. And then they came out with the next 3 or 4 episodes. And I was like, wait a minute. I need the niggas to hear this because I need the niggas to know what's going on. And so we've been listening. And it's so dope that this podcast gives a platform for us to not just, introduce you to people, but also for us to sit across from people whose work we respect and appreciate. So with that said, joining us in the crib today, we have deep voice Rodney Carmichael.
Yeah.
We got Sid Madden of the Louder Than a Riot podcast. Sid, Rodney, welcome to the crib.
Thank you so much.
Y'all hear that voice?
That intro.
Do y'all hear the voice?
It goes so well together. It's like a hello, and then
it's a good 1-2 punch. It's a great 1-2 punch.
You hear when he's tracking and he really leans into his accent. That's when it gets crazy.
That's when it gets. All right,
speaking of that accent, where are you from, Rodney?
I grew up in and around Atlanta, man. In and around.
So real fast, and I just always have this question for people who grew up around that time. When hip hop was just starting, the or should I say, like black music was really having that influx in Atlanta, and then what happened with Wayne? With Wayne down there, with the child murders, what was that time like, and did it have any type of effect on you and your relationship with music?
Oh man, so you're talking about the missing and murdered children down
here? I can't remember his last name. I know it's Wayne something.
Wayne Williams. Yeah,
Wayne Williams. Yeah.
Jesus.
Yeah, man, I was very young at that time. I was very young and. I really, you really didn't have a sense of what was going on. You just knew your parents were overprotective, or it seemed like they were overprotective at the time. You know what I mean? It wasn't until years later till I really had a sense of what was going on and how ironic it would be that, the same town where, young black kids were getting snatched up would end up being, the kind of hip hop city that it became years later. You know what I mean? Mm.
And we're gonna get into that because, like, the way y'all set this, I'm sorry, who's calling me?
Jesus, it better be Jesus.
It bet now. Jesus was just talking.
Yeah, Jesus was just talking. Jesus was calling on the main line. I thought I turned my FaceTime off. Okay, there we go. Okay, all right.
Real, cut now, that out.
Now, Sid, same question to you. Like, where'd you grow up and how did that have any type of, effect on your relationship with hip hop or black music?
Yeah, well, I'm originally from Boston, but I moved out to New York for college and I stayed for most of the time. I went down to D.C. for a little bit, of course, working at NPR headquarters down in D.C. But I'm very much the East Coast person on the team. I'm the one who always, you can hear it in the Bobby Shmurda episodes, I'm the one who's like, living through that summer of 2014 when the Shmoney dance was like the only universal two-step in the club type of thing. And it's funny because we constantly, Rodney and I, constantly go back and forth about who's the best out right now, who's reviving the game, where the renaissance is. And, he's very, staunchly Atlanta. But I love to talk about...
come on.
The reason I know Rodney's line is for the first time ever.
His voice went high.
Oh, yeah.
His voice went high.
His voice went up. So his voice went up and it sounded like a regular voice. Like it went from...
I knew he was lying because he sounded like me. He said something. I looked up. Man. I didn't even say nothing. but I mean, I think that is a great conversation. Where do y'all see that? Like that? Where if from y'all from your stance in the game, or as consumers or writers, or just you know pundits, where is that stamp right now?
That's a good question. I would say it's been very much decentralized in the age of the internet. And, you know, we were talking about this even in our upcoming episode, which is the third and final episode in the Bobby Shmurda trilogy that you're going to hear next week.
Which has been fire, by the way.
Thank you. Yeah,
like, absolutely. It's been fire, by the way. If you guys haven't listened to it, I mean, I know where this whole episode is bigging them up, but make sure y'all go listen to that. That shit is fire.
Thanks. I mean, we do. That's the whole point of the series. Like, we do deep dives into cases that really caught headlines, but then people think these acts just went away, or these things happened in a vacuum, or it was a flash in the pan.
That part.
We do a lot of nuance, like deep dive and contextualizing. Same thing with the Mac Phipps story, which is out of Louisiana, which is Norm's. I mean, to go back to your original question, I'm very much into this New York hip hop moment that we're having, and I think even
nice little Brooklyn drill moment.
You know,
the drill is back.
Even in a pandemic, nobody really is supposed to be outside. Like the energy of all these protests we've been seeing, the energy of like the new people coming up, making stuff on their own, very DIY. It rings so true to that like Brooklyn hustle mentality, which I'm, you know,
talk about it.
Exactly. So I'm waving the flag for East Coast always.
Oh yeah, Brooklyn. We do show up. When we show up, listen, we do our thing.
All right.
The whole gang could tell you that I don't listen to nothing but Brooklyn drill. Mm-hmm. But also, you know, there is this one song that you know that it's the most romantic song I've ever heard in my life.
Oh my god!
What song is that? Mouse Jones.
Throat Baby.
My God.
Dry Cash, an Atlanta resident. Mm. That's the most romantic song I've ever heard in my life. Like, I've never heard a song. Like, you
Throat
talk
baby.
About a kid. You talk about Hello. A kid. You talk about a kid being romantic, but also in 2020, being respectful, okay? He asked for consent. Let a young nigga come and play in your throat. God. Please, he asked for consent.
Hold on, who was this song by?
BRS.
One of your residents.
In and around Atlanta.
He's
in and around Atlanta.
Yeah.
He from that area.
Listen, I love it, but I know we have a short amount of time with y'all, so I definitely want to jump into it. Please explain to the people who've been living under a rock, or you know, may not be able to read too well. Let our listeners know about the Louder Than a Riot podcast and the messaging in that podcast is what caught me. So please let them know about NPR's Louder Than a Riot.
I mean, it's basically a podcast where we look at the interconnected rise between hip hop and mass incarceration over the last 40 years. You know, we started in the early 80s, and you know, really just in making this podcast, man, we didn't necessarily go into it like this, but we knew we wanted to look at hip hop and mass incarceration and the relationship between the two, right? Mm-hmm. And then and doing more research around that, it became apparent that they both kind of exploded together simultaneously. This parallel rise, you know, with the 80s comes the war on drugs from Ronald Reagan at the same time that, you know, rap as a recorded genre starts popping off. And, you know, next thing you know, America is the most carceral country on the planet. And hip hop is the most consumed genre, you know, and the coincidence is just too much to ignore. And so we just really wanted to kind of, you know, gather together some stories to really be able to kind of like parse that out and explore all of that and figure out, you know, what is behind this connection, you know, and obviously hip hop is always a reflection of us as Black folks. Mm-hmm. So to say that hip hop and mass incarceration have a relationship is just another way of saying mass incarceration and Black America, you know, have this entrenched relationship. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Exactly.
So we use the music to kind of explore a lot of that stuff.
And with it being such a sprawling type of topic, like you could consult with experts about it. You could talk to rappers about one-offs and like what they think about it. But we really wanted to show kind of like a proof of concept of this parallel rise. So that's why as journalists, we did deep dives into cases from the early 2000s up until just last year is the most recent case we talk about, to show you where the entanglement between, you know, Black life and Black criminality is in these cases, and to contextualize a lot of the structural and cultural violence that goes into having these things happen, and then goes into rappers being deemed the scapegoats or being the martyrs of the culture when they're really like moving American pop culture forward in all these ways, you know? And I like to always say, like, I mean, I like to think about like how much the lyrics have been telling us this from jump, like how Rodney says, from the 80s until right now. Like in our first episode, we start with the message, because we say it has to start with the message. That was the first, you know,
which was the first lyrical record. I have this argument. My dad is in his office working right now. I've had this argument forever that the first lyrical rap song, not the hip, that nigga Melly Mel, he may be off his rocker now, but that nigga Melly Mel said, everywhere. Broken glass
everywhere. Mm-hmm.
People pissing on the stage like they just don't care. Like that, I was like, wait, what happened? Yeah. Wait, I thought. Now, the niggas might have been dressed like the Isley Brothers, but.
It's all about what you say. It's all about what you say, brother.
It's about. It's
right. And it's a lot about the dichotomy of like hip hop being.
Go back to that word. Go back to that word.
Dichotomy of hip hop being.
Ryan Leslie, word of the day.
Absolutely.
Ryan Leslie, word of the day. Absolutely. We like it. We like it.
A beauty pageant and a blood sport and something that is always enticed, but also kind of like frightened white America, which is why they like Inch a Little Bit Closer, which is why they want to always be in close proximity, but still, you know, a suburbs ride away from this shit, you know? So we really wanted to take the blindfold off of people who kind of casually listen to hip hop for so long and show you like, this is the real world implications that's informing the music and holding the mirror up to society and always has been.
Jeez. Mm.
Now, well, you know what? I'll save that question. Now, Ryan, you had a question you wanted to ask, right?
Not yet, but keep going.
Oh,
I wanted to dive straight into Bobby Smarter stuff, because that shit. Well,
okay, so let's work our way there. So I wanted to ask, because it's like a two part question, because as somebody, I'm the broadcaster of the crew, right? Like everybody was doing something before we linked together to do this, right? So I guess, and it could be selfish. It could be selfish advice for myself, but also just like. Giving people like a little peek behind the magic. How do you remain impartial covering something you're so adamant about, right? Like, this is hip hop.
Like,
this
you
is
love hip hop. Absolutely.
This is what I'm, you know, far be it from me to, you know, put words in your mouth, but I'm pretty sure this is the lane of music that got you at NPR Music. So like, you're doing this deep dive, and these might be songs or artists that you love, but you have to be impartial in the reporting. Or is it not? Or do you attack this as an op-ed almost?
And that's such a good question. That's probably a better question than we've been asked in any interview.
I kind of do this.
That's Mouse Jones, ladies and gentlemen. That's Mouse Jones.
Kind of do this.
But it's real, right? Like that's, and those are kind of conversations that we had in terms of making this, because, you know, we felt like it was important that, you know, our place in the culture and the way we identify with the culture come through in the reporting, but, you know, we could still be reporters. And so this whole thing that you're talking about, you know, they commonly referred to as objectivity in journalism, right?
Yes, yes.
And, you know, the thing about objectivity is it ain't real. I mean, there's no such thing as being totally objective when you're reporting. Like, every decision that you're making as a journalist is coming from a place of subjectivity, whether you realize that and can acknowledge that or not. You know what I'm saying? Now, I think us as Black journalists, as Black reporters, we have always kind of understood that. And journalism on a larger scale is finally getting to the point where it's beginning to grapple with this and recognize this, you know, that in a lot of ways, you know, just the journalism as a structure and objectivity as an idea, it has a lot of just, you know, white supremacist ideals kind of steeped in, you know, in terms of prioritizing.
We're not supposed to be here.
Exactly. You know what
Let
I mean?
Let alone tell our story.
And in terms of in terms of normalizing and saying whatever the norm is a point of view that usually, you know, is the overwhelming majority, you know, of the culture or white folks, in other words. You know what I mean? And so they make decisions all the time that they feel like are objective decisions as journalists, as reporters, that, you know, to us, we can see the bias in them. And so I think that we disavowed ourselves of any, you know, any reason to have some false sense of objectivity guide us in this reporting. Now, we wanted to be fair. You know what I'm saying?
Okay.
We wanted to be able to look at issues from every angle and flip them upside down and et cetera, and inside out and that type of thing. And I think when you can acknowledge your own bias, you know, it makes it easier to do that. It's when you're blind to your own bias that you don't have any sense of how to do that. And so we were able to go in eyes wide open and be able to look at that thing, but still also have a sense of ourselves and the story. Yeah. I hope that's
I think a lot of people, especially in the journalism world, I'll say even up until like 3 months ago, they confused or convoluted being objective with being truthful and like getting to the truth of the situation. And it's like, yeah, there's different
bars.
Like there are different versions of the truth. And yeah, if you have your blinders on and you've never been to East Flatbush, you've never been to Brownsville and you just
you don't know what that truth looks like.
Yeah, you don't know it.
You don't understand
or you choose not to. Like you understand it, but you put your like deeply ingrained stereotypes, like you put your blinders on and your rose colored glasses on about like what you're doing for certain societal movements or whatever, like, you know. And I think we were very staunch from the beginning in not doing that, and we were very staunch in the beginning of having us, me and Rodney, sound like who we cover and where and how we would talk to each other if we were really just leaning back at the end of the day on our at our desk at work, or like meeting up at a stoop or like at happy hour or something. Like, I'm not going to tell you what an MCM bag is, because if you're from hip hop, you know what the fuck an MCM bag is.
Exactly. You know what an MCM bag is.
Like, all of those things.
Yeah,
and it's so funny because they come off as like casual conversation between me and Rodney, but sometimes it was whole conversation. Be like, nah, I'm leaving this in. Nah, we're going to let Killer Mike say what he has to say. Nah, we're going to give, I was going to say someone from an episode who's coming up. Nah, we're going to give Mac tips like time. And
you could drop it. You could drop it.
I mean, you know, we family.
You can show love.
Exclusive.
I mean, you could show love.
We family here.
But I think like, so much of...
She's not going to show the love. She's not.
But
it's cool. It's cool.
I think so much of what people like us are rarely granted is our moment and our space to tell our stories. Because, like, yeah, you can have people breaking down stats about the hood who've never actually stepped foot in the hood, or you can get a tour guide who's really about it,
or you can have literally from somebody who's actually
exactly. I think everybody and this is something as a journalist I've learned over time, like you can't discount people's voices because everybody is an expert in their own experience, and I've said that many times.
Bingo.
And I think that was something that we were very passionate about, like, and very forthright about always reinforcing with every single episode.
So I have a question. I have a quick question. I think you said you guys were saying something to the effect that you guys try to look at the truth from every angle. And even again, for the people at home who haven't listened, you know, whether it's the DJ drama episode, the Bobby Shmurda episode, you really get a kind of a deep dive, not only into what is going on, like what goes on, or what the superficial, what we all see on the news articles and everything, but actually deep diving into the history of certain situations. So who or what was one of the cases that I don't know, maybe you had your blinders on to, that after kind of doing your research, you start to kind of see things from a different perspective? What was one of those cases for both of you guys?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, for me, it was the Bobby Shmurda story. And you know, when you hear the episode that actually dropped today,
Fire.
Yeah.
Like you hear Sid.
He
said, thank you. Sid. Please. Please do. Yeah. Bow down to Sid, man.
Sid, what you did? if I may, Sid, what you did on that episode, and I'm just saying as a journalist, like I'm not putting any, because a woman, a black woman, as a journalist, what you did, and I was driving. That's how I consume my podcast. Mm-hmm. I was driving, and I'm driving through Brooklyn, mind you. I'm driving through East Flatbush while I'm listening to this. Like I'm literally going down Louisiana, about to hop on the belt. So I'm listening. I'm like, I'm literally past 51st. I'm like, oh shit. And then like there was this tone you had that wasn't so much comforting. It was, and this is my interpretation. It was like almost like, you're learning as well. And it was this ushering. That's what it was. It felt like you were ushering the audience into this story that you're guiding them to. A1.
Fantastic.
As a podcaster, I was inspired.
Yeah, it was that was probably one of the hardest interviews I've done for this whole series. And so that means a lot. Thanks. And yeah.
It reminded me of, I don't know if anybody else listened to Mogul, OG Reg, rest in peace, mm-hmm. Combat.
No doubt.
Like OG Reg, that's my heart. And I remember listening to Mogul, and I remember listening to, I think either him, I forgot who sent it to me. I got the episode early. And it was the episode where he's talking to the family about mm-hmm. Chris Lighty. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
The issues he was having with his wife, the legal issues.
Right.
And it was a moment where I heard Combat Jack turn into Reggie Osei.
Mm.
If that makes sense, right?
It was that
moment where he turned into Reggie Osei, where he had compassion for, he had love and admiration for Chris Lighty as Combat Jack, as the executive.
The man.
But Chris Lighty, the man, he had to almost hold himself accountable for like, well, all right, I've been supporting this, so I now have to stand up to this. Mm. And that was likening because that's what I was feeling. Right. And I'm from the hood. I'm outside. So it's like hearing this, you almost don't realize that, like you said earlier, like these stories don't happen in a vacuum. And to hear it from the other side, but to hear it that way, I was like, wow.
Yeah.
It was like one of those moments. So kudos to you. This episode was amazing. Everybody should go listen. We're going to keep telling y'all to go listen. But yeah, that.
Again, wow. I'm about to say y'all know at home that we big up our friends and all of that, like, but like this is like, if you guys, I mean, and I know a lot of you guys at home, y'all like watching all of like the Netflix unsolved mysteries and all of that. This is that, like, this is that
the real deal.
This is the real deal. Holyfield, right here.
It took me back. It took me back to that year that it happened.
Like, right. I was, no, I was seriously.
Going back to it, going back to what you were saying about people having their blinders on, like if you're from New York and I'm from Brooklyn, we all know those people that never left Brooklyn. Just like we know those people that are blind to what goes on in every other borough besides Manhattan when you're of that class that doesn't want to see anything. And the only time they see us is on a news screen, and which I hate the news because everything is negative about us. So it brought me back to that story about how there were still positives in that story about what happened. And it's just not the dark to everything. I know a couple of people that are involved in that situation, whether it be managers or people that are still locked up. And it's like I said, it took me back to a time where it doesn't feel like that long ago. It doesn't feel like it was 2014. Yeah. It doesn't feel like 6 years. It feels like, and especially
yesterday,
when you guys told the story,
it feels like
it's happening. Like it just happened. Like this is just a brand new news report. So like, when I heard you guys talking about it, and I really just like, I was listening to it today, actually, in my bed, and I closed my eyes and I put my phone like on my shoulder, and I'm imagining going into the studio.
So you had Rodney Deep voice in your ear like that?
Oh,
like,
hey now. Whoa. Hey.
Now, I'm just asking, all right, bro. Here
come
I go,
on, son.
Once again,
come on, son.
When I'm being a
way to take a serious
saying?
Topic, and so, go, make it go left.
So Sid, Rodney, y'all see what I'm going through, right? As being the broadcaster here, you see, like, journalistically, I had that instinct, like,
you,
I wanted to
no,
build
you
the
just
story
put
more.
Your blinders on just then and only thought about what you were doing. That's what we was talking about. You see what I'm saying?
All right. So, hold on. Like listen. So I have a question for y'all.
I just want to be off. Like, wait, Matt. What the
oh,
heck?
Sorry.
Hold on. Wait.
Oh, go ahead.
Ryan was going.
Oh, go ahead, Ryan. Go ahead, Ryan.
Finish. Rodney was in your ear. Go ahead.
Rodney and Sid. There's both. One.
Okay.
So when they were talking about Quad, I was just imagining, because believe it or not, right before that happened, I was with Shy at Quad.
Oh, 200. Yeah.
Yes. I was with Shy at Quad. This is when I was getting introduced to them. And mind you, I know the industry part because I worked at labels, but I also know the street side because I knew all of some of the GS non people, but I knew like GSE. I knew like the older group of them. Yeah. So those are my homies. So I would hear both sides, but I couldn't put face to face until like, you know, the videos and everything came out and all my people in the videos. But the moment when you were like, they were in Quad and everybody was upstairs, I knew what studio they were in. I knew what floor it was. I knew what street it was. I felt the situation because there's been other situations that just haven't gone that far in that studio. But that situation alone brought me to a place where it was like, damn, they really took some greatness from us off some shit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Man, that's crazy.
Yeah. So I have a question. As you guys know, it feels like kind of because it's not resolved yet, I guess, or it is, and this nigga
just
don't
doesn't feel
concede.
Over.
But we just had an election, and we just got a new president, and
president elect.
And the president elect, and ironically enough, the vice president elect. Well, the president elect is more to blame. The vice president elect was the one who was making sure that it happened. But the 94 crime bill made sure that the 94 crime bill was implemented. So
he wrote the 94 crime bill.
Pretty much. Right. So I want to know, I want you guys to speak to just kind of how you guys feel about that. And, you know, also you guys doing a show about the ramifications of and the victims of the crime bill. You know, this is, as you said, you know, hip hop and this mass incarceration go hand in hand. And right now we have a president in office that I don't want to say is to blame for it, but is literally one of the biggest facets to it.
President elect.
Yeah, I mean it's the huge irony of America, right? Like,
yeah.
You know, and we talk about that in the first episode. You know, Biden authored that crime bill, and he part of his campaign to get into office was, you know, he knew he had to apologize.
Mm-hmm.
He had to apologize for that crime bill because, you know, where we are today, you know, not just us, but everybody seems to agree that there needs to be, you know, a level of reform.
Oh, 200%.
A level of abolition. You know what I mean? So it's like you can't even, you know, you can't even campaign. I mean, it was so interesting because it was just like, you know, in making this, you know, many months ago, we're looking at what's going on in campaign season. And it's like, you know, it kind of doesn't matter who wins this election. Like everybody in that office shares a level of guilt in terms of,
yes,
you know, where we are with this criminal justice system and mass incarceration and how much it just disproportionately falls on us. You know what I mean? Like anybody in that seat of power, you know, has some blame in that. It's inescapable, you know. So but yeah, it is interesting to see Biden, you know, in that seat now, and you know, we're gonna have a vice president who, you know, built her reputation on being a prosecutor.
Mm-hmm. Enforcing that crime bill.
That's what
exactly,
I'm saying. Yeah.
Exactly. But it's also interesting. It's going to be interesting to see how much people in power, you know, whether or not they've just been paying lip service to the idea of changing the system, confronting the system that, you know, they in a lot of ways either help create or enforce, as you say. Yeah. You know what I mean? It's going to be interesting to see what gets done going forward with that.
I mean, I'm as a journalist, I'm naturally cynical. So I don't really wholeheartedly trust any you know, heartwarming image.
White people.
reminds me of some guys I know. I happen to be on the show.
I'm glad. Glad it's not me this episode.
I was about to say, reminds me of definitely you, but me too. I get it.
No. But I was going to say, I don't trust any...
Speak your truths.
These white men are dangerous.
Politicians. And a lot of politicians are white men. But yeah, I don't trust anybody who in a position of power who did those things to get to that position of power, right? So like I'm even reminded of I think it was Rodney, you told me about the JPEG Mafia interview where he like Kamala said on record like she put mad people away for smoking drugs, and then she went on the Breakfast Club, said she smoked a little weed, and he's like, so let them out. You know, it's not just about apologizing, it's about atonement, you know, it's about action items. There's no apology other than an action item. I'll tell my significant other that, I'll tell anybody I interview that, I'll say any, you know. So I that's my belief, but I do always want to bring it back to like, what is in within my power to do about it, and what's within my power other than, you know, the civic duty of voting or getting your body up and protesting things that you feel are unjust and like human rights violations. Is like, you put it into your work, into your purpose work. And just to bring it back to the show, like, I think that's what we've been trying to do, like weaving these injustices through the story 100%. Of hip hop every step of the way. Like, we're talking about things we learned. Like, I never knew about non-unanimous juries until we talked about the Mac Phipps case. And
I was just about to ask you about that.
Racist, like things like that, or the fact that 94% of plea deals in America, 94% of cases in America end in a plea deal,
are pleaded
because they just throw as much as they can at you to get you to like cop to like whatever number of years. So as long as they have a win, they don't care if it's 20 years, 70.
It's a big agenda. It don't matter.
So I always just bring it back to like, what can I do? What's within my purpose?
So then that actually leads me to one more question. As you guys have, you know, with how you guys are, especially the amazing journalism that you guys are doing, you guys are getting a chance to see this from all sides. So what are some action items that you would love to see for our president-elect and vice president-elect to put in place,
kind of tone
to atone for what they've done to get that position of power?
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row, dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
See, I always feel like, I mean, that's a good question. I always feel kind of torn as a journalist about whether or not that part of it should be something where I put my voice in it. I mean, obviously, I want to see stuff change, but I just feel like, you know, for me, the work is just exposing the BS, you know, and the people who are about, you know, fighting for change, you know, whether it be through activism, whether it be through the political system. I did vote. You know what I'm saying? I vote, you know, but I also know that voting ain't enough.
True.
You know what I mean? But yeah, I don't know. I remember Ta-Nehisi Coates used to say stuff like that too, after he would write those dynamic, you know, pieces at Atlantic, you know, like, you know, the one about he did one mm-hmm. about mass incarceration, yes, but yeah. but, mm-hmm. but the really big one was on man, what was that? What was the really big one that he did?
I was thinking about his book. I was gonna say Me Against the
Well,
book.
Yeah, that's the book.
Yes.
It's not gentrification. It's on reparations.
Yes.
I'm sorry. The really big one he did on reparations. Yes. And in interviews,
the case for reparations.
And when in interviews, when he would get asked that same question that you just asked, Mac, like he would always kind of say, well, you know, it's just my job as a journalist to kind of like the same answer I gave. And I remember I would be like, come on.
Just tight, like, come on, man.
Right.
Nah, yeah.
But I guess in being in that position now, I kind of feel the same. I kind of feel like, you know, like we put so much into the work and into making sure that, you know, we did acknowledge our biases going into these stories and that we do think about this, you know, in as complex and complicated a way as possible, and that we try to challenge all of the, you know, all of the norms that you know, that journalism has, you know, in terms of how journalism has typically covered these stories. Because, you know, media is a big mm-hmm. part of the problem with all of this.
Yeah. There's a long lineage of mass media reinforcing racism and then not calling it racism. You know, like we say straight mm-hmm. up in a exactly. lot of these episodes, this is racist. This is a human rights violation.
Yes.
We say, you know?
Yes.
So, yeah. Yes. Sorry, go ahead, Rennie.
Yeah. So, no. So, you know, I guess, you know, so much of that is taking so much work on our part. I feel like I'm going to leave the other part to the people who, you know, are more suited or better suited for that kind of work. You know what I mean?
I got you.
Obviously I can have my opinions, but that's a good question. It's kind of like when you ask the rapper the political question and, you know, whatever he says is going to be like, why did we bother asking the rapper this question? You know what I'm saying? I guess what I'm trying to say is I don't even necessarily know where to begin with it, because so much needs to be righted. You know,
this, but I think that's important. Yeah. Not to step on whatever you.
No, no, I'm saying you're absolutely.
But
right.
I think, I think that's so important, right? I think that's so important, especially for those of us who are paid to think, right? Like, there's a difference, right? Like a rapper, we're kind of, you know, whether it be fair or not, or just or
we
not,
give them a break.
We kind of give them a break, or we're extremely hard, right? But for those, but that's not their job, right? Their job is to essentially make music that we like, mm-hmm. right? With those right. of us who are empowered by the people, everybody here, we're only here in this space doing this podcast, being able to do this interview with you guys, because there's a proof of concept, right? We've had this show, people listen to it. So we're essentially paid to think. And I think the problem is, like, I see a lot of guests, the influx of guests who've asked to come on the show in the next coming weeks, that's the first thing they say, no politics, no politics, no politics. And this isn't a political podcast, nor do we look to have these conversations. This fits in the realm of the conversation we're having, and mm-hmm. we're all intelligent enough to speak on it without sounding mm-hmm. like idiots. But mm-hmm. the fact that you didn't just toss it aside, and the fact that the people, now somebody might hear it and think you're rambling. Somebody might hear it and say, yo, he's making mad sense. And that's the side I sit on, because we heard you literally work through that thought.
Oh, yeah.
And I think that's extremely important and necessary for, like, you spoke and you were like, well, here, and we heard you go to this idea, and we heard you come back to this idea, and you still settled in the middle of, ooh, that's rough. I really don't have an answer. But we need that, right? And that's extremely important. So far be it for me to tell an esteemed journalist not to be too rough on yourself, but don't, right? Because I think that's the part that we need.
Yeah, cool. We do. Cool.
I'm glad you understand what I was trying to
say. Yeah, because I just be talking bullshit. So I know. I understand. I just say the first thing that comes to my mind, and typically sometimes it sounds good, sometimes it don't. But as being somebody, I understood what you were trying to avoid happening here.
Thank you.
I do want to ask a two-part question. Maybe not. Is there a case, or is there, I hate saying cases, is there a story that you covered during this podcast, whether it's been out, when it's come out or not, where
you're trying to make you give up the goods?
I know, I keep already.
No, I'm not trying, I'm not, listen, I'm, respect what's going on here, Ryan.
My
has there been one where you, where you stopped being a consumer for a moment and realized that there's real people on the other side of this?
I thought you were gonna answer. I'm sorry. I thought you were gonna say the recent one, the one that didn't come out this week, for sure. Which is
not the one that didn't come out. We're trying to get
right. Which is, you know, about the real world effects of a family who their son died at the hands of someone who's in GS9, like associated with Bobby Schmurda, right? Mm-hmm. So there's that one. And I, like I said earlier, like that was one of the hardest interviews I've ever had to do. Not even within this podcast, like I've ever had to do. I've talked to a lot of artists before. I've done, you know, human interest pieces before, but like to have to ask a grieving mother to reread the closing statement on the sentencing hearing of her killer is like a very hard thing. And I had to
once again, she
kept apologizing because, you know, like as women, like you're trying to not show emotion, but then with this emotional thing, she's like, I'm sorry, can I take a break? I'm like, don't apologize. We could take as many breaks as you want,
right?
So there was that one. And then coming up in a few weeks, we have another story that is even more personal and intimate than the one y'all heard this week, and it's focused around,
if you want to say a name,
Philly rapper who is well known like on the cypher scene level, and that story is you're not gonna guess his story.
y'all know me, like hold on, Philly, hold like on. My second I about home. To say what's wrong with y'all?
I'll say if it's who I think it is, I'm excited.
And then
if it is who I think it is, it's, and then, I'm excited.
After that, we have another story. We went over to the West Coast at the top of this year before like COVID closed everything down, and we have like a different way in and a different lens in on the legacy of Nipsey Hussle that I feel like people have never heard before. And I think that's just a through line of a lot of the stories we try to tell. Like, we're trying to tell you the story behind the story. We're trying to tell you the real world implications and what goes on after, you know, after the trending topics are over and after the headlines have been written. And, you know, of course, there could be a cover story about this person when they get out, but it's like, how are they living as a human being in between the time they were in the spotlight and their, you know, moment in the sun and redemption, trying to get, you know, swooped up by another label. Like, we just try to show you like the humanity behind the art form. I remember when we were pitching this thing, like however many years ago, because this has been, obviously you could tell from the reporting, it's been a long process.
Yeah.
Like, somebody asked us who are the, like, we said we're going to talk to rappers, and they were like, okay, so who are the real people in the stories? We're like, the rappers. Like, it's so funny because you know, in America,
how did you not
get programmed to like see celebrities as not human beings, you know? And I think every word, every bar, every lyric, every couplet, like, it's informed by real world experiences, and so you want to honor that and show the depth and breadth of it.
And I guess to tie back on to that, because I, man, listen to that episode today, right? And let me ask y'all this. This will set up the question. What is Rodney and Sid, everybody, what is y'all definition of justice, right? Like, if something were to happen, just like in a very utopian, you know, very simple answer, like, if something were to happen to you, what is justice? Like, what is your idea of justice?
Man, I don't know, to be honest. I mean, I think that's one thing that there's this interview that, and I hope it ends up making one of our last episodes that I did with a really well known rapper
named
it's T.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thanks, Rodney. Clearly, we know who the favorite is today. Thanks, Rodney, giving us a bone. Thanks.
Y'all stupid.
Just here giving you guys a great interview. At least we can get it exclusive. It's like pulling teeth.
Oh man. But no, T.I., I asked him something about, you know, what would America look like if there weren't this level of injustice mm-hmm. directed at us, directed at our communities.
What would Black America and be like, man, without oppression?
He had this the most profound answer, which I almost hate to give it away because
Hold on, go ahead. Ask the question, and I'm gonna try and answer. Ask me the question. I'm T.I.
Are you gonna answer? Yeah. Okay.
Hold on.
Right, all the way to the side.
Ask me the question, Rodney. I'm ready.
So, Tip, what would America look like or be like if there was no injustice in this country?
Well, my comrade, that's actually an exquisite question of the highest level, and an honor to serendipitously be here to answer the question. I actually think that if my top was back, I had the motivation to tell them who they don't know.
me.
I like to think I probably have the best impression in the land. I'd like to.
That was
I. You know what I mean?
That's not bad for a New York cat's impression of.
Well, thank you, my good comrade. Thank you. No, but the reason I asked y'all what does justice look like is because that episode, the episode just ring, and y'all got to hear this, right? Y'all have to hear this. If you don't hear any episode of this podcast, mm-hmm. y'all have to hear this episode because when Sid starts to break down the way the prosecutor, Sid, you said something on that episode. I don't know. I mean, I know you remember, but if I may paraphrase what you said that no, because in the eyes of the law, no Black boy could ever be fully mm-hmm. innocent. And because of my ties to the street, I'm not going to speak too much on that. But what on that incident? But there was two victims, one victim being a woman. They referred to you said they referred to the woman as mm-hmm. a victim, but the young boy, who was killed, they made their case in order to get a conviction. They had to make him a criminal by association
to paint it as an act of revenge. So, yeah.
Right. And in the very next word, and I don't know if this was done on purpose, I like to give y'all credit and say it was. The very next word after that was the boy's mother saying, "We got justice. They're going away." And to me, that stuck out. And I had to pause it for a minute and think. I do that with podcasts. Sometimes I pause and think. I gotta adjust it. And because she sounds so elated, but is that true elation when she has to sit at home and realize, like, because she had said before, like, my son wasn't about that life. And, you know, essentially what mother would know, you know, my mom.
True indeed. Mm-hmm.
Well, she knew. Never mind. But
some know, some don't.
Some know. Some right. But to have to deal with that, right, to swallow that pill, I guess I'm saying, in order to get justice. Is it really justice?
I feel like there's justice on both sides. Some people's justice will be different if you're the one going to prison. And that side of the family is losing somebody. And there'll be justice on another side, somebody who lost somebody, like with death and stuff like that. I feel like.
But in order to secure that, you cost, had to. Yeah. Exactly. The cost was your son's name.
It's absolutely. A tainted.
The cost was your
tainted,
son's was your son's legacy.
Yeah, it's a tainted justice. Yeah,
it's.
So I'm asking. So like Rodney said, like hearing that in the on the cutting room floor, even Sid hearing that. In real time, did that change the way you view justice in this world, or at least in America?
I think, well, after she said that, I was like, do you feel like you had justice in this situation? She said, yes. And I said, but they made him a gang member. And she was like, and this is something that did actually make the cutting room floor. She was like, but just to know that they weren't going to do it again to another family, or maybe a version of that did make it in. She's like, just to know, she was like, yeah, but just to know they weren't going to do that to another family, that made me be able to sleep a little easier. Like,
And I would have much rather hear that. And that didn't come. What she did, she read her statement. And in her statement, she said she believed that they would do it again.
Exactly.
But she hearing that out of her mouth, it would have put some ease. Because I'm like, yo, the position we're put in to receive this justice, it makes me.
Exactly.
It's like, is it worth it, right? Like, is it worth it? Like.
Like, even when the scales are tipped in your favor, you got to sacrifice a little bit of yourself for it.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. You have to, there's always that, like that level of, to your point, Mouse. Yeah. It could either come off one of two ways, right? Like with that statement, either it could come off like we said, a tainted version of justice or martyrdom, you know, you know, he's his mother is sacrificing something greater than him to ensure that this wouldn't, you know, that this wouldn't happen again. And again, just like you guys said, truth comes in many different colors, different shapes and sizes. Yeah. So, you know, that is very much her truth. We don't fully know, you know, his ties to the streets or what he was doing, what he didn't do, or his affiliate, you know, all of that stuff is hearsay.
Right.
And that's why there are so many, like we leave the space for the open questions. And it's like, yeah, the prosecutor said they had a detective who told them an informant, blah, blah, blah. But also we talked to all these people on and off the record. Cause a lot of his friends and family like wouldn't go on the record with us, which is fine. But like, as long as we can have them say something that we can repeat, like, yeah, and they told us, no, he was never affiliated, blah, blah, blah. He hung out with these people, but he was never in it, blah, blah, blah. So it's like, yeah, the lines get blurred so much, but then that's why on the back end of everything that happened in court, we did a short breakdown of structural, cultural, and direct violence. And these are things that are so covert and invisible in neighborhoods until they are not. Like, a lot of the people think of violence as like physical altercations, like that shooting, but there's structural violence, which goes into kids not graduating high school, which goes into people being able to sell crack since the fifth grade. And then there's cultural violence, which is the prejudice that are placed upon them because they come from this neighborhood, because they have this zip code. And it all collides in moments of real world interactions. And then it gets played out so that you become a martyr, like you said, Mac, in some ways.
Mm-hmm.
This is
definitely.
It's
definitely. I mean, I think.
I mean, we know from being fans, but did y'all have any idea just like how deep hip hop could be? Because like this is literally like Ross said, this deeper than rap.
Yeah.
Like what we're talking about, what you guys are doing an amazing job of getting across to people is that literal statement. It's deeper than rap. This is deeper than the braggadocious, that art form of just wordplay and all that. It's deeper than rap. Like, did you guys know just, or did you have that connection with hip hop before this?
Yeah.
Knowing that it was deeper than rap?
I mean, we wouldn't have been able to pitch this as hard as we did at a network that is, you know, predominantly white without like knowing it and showing it and campaigning and showing up for it every day. But go ahead, Renny.
Yeah. And, you know, that's a part of, you know, as journalists, you know, for me, like covering hip hop is about so much more than just, you know, reviewing albums or, you know, creating year-end lists and that kind of stuff. I mean, that stuff is the that's the fun part. You know what I mean? It's cool to do that. I mean, hell, I'm up at Thursday at midnight to hear what's dropping and all of that. But, you know what I mean? Yeah. But to me as a journalist, you know, especially at.
You clearly miss Throat Baby.
I don't know what
Throat Baby.
But when Throat Baby dropped, you missed that.
I don't know what happened, bro. I gotta get my Google on when the interview is over.
I'm gonna send you the link. Don't worry, we friends now. We colleagues and friends now. I got y'all.
Listen, sometimes you don't have to take him serious. Everything he says does not have to be taken.
Oh my god!
But I actually do have a question. when talking about like off the record statements, and since they are off the record, like there's certain things you can't say, like how do you build that into your story of telling people's stories? Like, I know it's difficult to say those things because you really can't if you want to put them on. Yeah, you can't. But how do you, there's certain things you have to say. But it's the way you say it. So how do you kind of build that into your stories?
I'm sure I understand the question.
The question, yeah.
Well, I think at least this is my interpretation of what you're saying. Like, I think because what Sid was discussing about, you know, mm-hmm. talking off the record with certain people, like, how do you use those off the record statements to substantiate and help other on the record statements and help, because in that off the record statement, there was probably a truth that you now have to use in telling the story.
Oh, you mean like how you substantiate it and stuff like that?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Sorry about my, you know, my words.
No. It was not you. It was me. But go ahead. So, I mean, for one thing, I'm sorry. I said,
go ahead.
I mean, for one thing, like a lot of off the record stuff is never used, right? We just literally can't use it but like, for instance, in the Mac story, there's a witness to the shooting at the club that night who
the one exactly, who didn't want to talk.
Mm-hmm. Who later recants her years later, she says that she was, you know, she testified under pressure from the DAs. And we reached out to her again and wanted to interview her for our story. And she said she didn't want to be interviewed, but she didn't mind us saying that one of the reasons why she didn't want to talk to us on the record is because of the pressure that police still, you know, her fear of the pressure that police still put on people who speak out against them, you know, down there in Slidell, Louisiana. So, you know.
It just sounds racist.
Slidell.
Yeah.
Where you going, Slidell?
Like, ugh. Yeah.
A lot of people. Jesus. A lot Christ. Of times, like, you know, the term like off the record, it's been dramatized in certain ways. But when people say something's off the record, it has to qualify usually as something that's going to affect their life or livelihood. And in the case of that young woman who didn't want to talk, it was going to affect her life, right? In the case of some of Brian's friends who still live around the way,
living
it was
going to
affect
their
life. So we're like, okay, we're okay putting this off the record. But like, like Ronnie said, you got to check with them what is okay to say in paraphrase in what they said, even if it's off the record.
Okay.
I think that's one of the most important parts of this, because I'm normally not this quiet, but this situation is so close mm-hmm. to home, it kind of feels that way.
Put you in a predicament.
It puts
right.
me in a way, mm-hmm. it's like mm-hmm. to do or to not do, to say or to not say, because I know the people that are affected on mm-hmm. both sides mm-hmm. of this. So in this whole conversation, even when I listened to it this morning, it was not more of what I could say while we're doing this episode. It was more of what I can listen mm-hmm. to and what I can really take in and understand that I can't always, like you said, there's always more sides to a story. I can't always say my story because somebody might feel a way about my side of the story because I might know certain things.
Right.
Or I might get a call, which I have before, like, yo, Ra, we appreciate you speaking good about X, Y, and Z. Yeah. So that's in a situation for me where it's just like, I want to say so much, but I can't say so much. And I don't want to say too little because I don't want to seem like I don't care so much because I care so much. And it's tough, but like, this is just, it's amazing to me. That's why I'm really just in awe.
Mm. Even just being around you, Ra, and knowing your affiliations with the sides involved, it even gave me a different listen to it. Like, you know, listening to both episodes, you start to, I think we all fall victim to looking at a lot of times these celebrities or these situations as happening like once or like, oh my God, this is so crazy. But then you start to get the chance to talk to the people who knew these people. You start to start to hear from the people who are actually involved in this situation, and the hard exterior of celebrity begins to crack. And through the crack, you start to see what shines through, whether it is those different glimmers of who they were. Like y'all was saying, I think his mom said something like, yo, Bobby was the, or Akil, Akil was the type of kid who, if he saw that somebody was dancing at a party, like, right, you'd have to bring him out in a stretcher out, because he's trying to outdance everybody. And so you start to kind of, because I don't have a more prettier word for it, you really start to humanize these guys. So, yeah.
So let me ask.
Yeah, very big kudos to you guys for that.
Thank you, man.
So let me ask you guys this, you know, before we let you guys out of here, as a journalist, you know, self-taught, you know what I mean? I ain't go to college or nothing, just grew up, you know, basically studying the double XL. I tell people all the time, like Rob Markman is one of my closest friends and mentors now. And it's so dope because I used to steal the actual double XL magagines. From the everybody, we're all of an age.
Of course.
If you remember going to the supermarket, you remember the double XL would be right there. So when my mom checking out, I'm like,
stolen.
Like, I'm out, boy. Like, I got to a point, my mom be like, where you get these magazines? I bet you want to know. But so it's dope, right? And it's like, now that I'm in this moment where I share space with, you know, writers and people that I look up to and minds that I grew up looking up to and listening to and who taught me this as a journalist myself, I'm always like, what did I learn? Right. Even if it's this podcast and we had a discussion about niggas ain't shit, but what did I learn? Right. Like, what did I learn from whoever we spoke to? You know, what did I learn? Y'all have a super intricate story that you guys are covering, a ever evolving story that you guys are covering. I want to ask y'all before y'all get out of here, what have you learned?
What have you learned, Sid?
Why are you doing that? Why are you really rhyming?
They journalists. Real journalists think before they talk.
I'm going to tell you why. And this is kudos to what we doing over here at the guy next door. We've been smoking their ass. Okay. Smoking their ass. So Rodney been throwing. He been deflecting. Oh, yeah. I see what's going on.
Hey, he's asking some good ass questions. I ain't gonna lie.
They really
That was a good Atlanta pause. He was like, "So
That was 23-3. That's what that was.
I like that. I like that.
Well, I've learned that real storytelling and real truth telling takes a long time. Rodney and I both started working at NPR in 2017. I came at the later in the year, Rodney got there early in the year. As soon as we got together, we're like, yo, we need a hip-hop podcast from NPR, and we need something that's not just like two-way or like round table, right? We knew we wanted that. But between then and now, the incubation process, the research process, the fact check, the edit, the production, the reaching out to sources, the chasing people, it's been so, and then learn again, like I said, like learning about the laws that are in play and are like presented to be like a shadow catch-all for neighborhoods of color, Black and brown people. It's just been, I think the volume and the complexity of the work is really what has surprised me. Cause it's like, people will complain about a 50-minute episode. I'm like, motherfucker, this 50-minute episode took a year of my life. Okay. So
yeah,
I don't know who's complaining about that. You know, put it in my veins.
So that's why I mean, even as like, if I interview someone for like an album or we're doing an album review, like I'm very, cognizant and respectful of how, like, you can tell who puts time into what, because it shows. Even if you don't think it's good, even if you don't think the album is good, and you're not like fucking with certain songs or for certain topics, like, you got to respect the sheer volume of effort and work that went into it. And so it's even surprised me how long, because like I said, like I've been in New York for a while. I lived through the summer of 2014 and the fall of 2014 and all those things. Like I've loved hip hop all my life. I thought I knew some of these stories, and I've learned new layers to these stories. So, and I've done that, and I've learned those new layers through the paces of the work. Like, this is like, there's no replacement for doing the work.
That's good. And on the heels of that, I'm gonna say you know, one thing that I think I've definitely learned is that the work is never done.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's funny mm-hmm. that you mentioned combat at the top of this yeah. because this
yeah, rest in peace,
you know,
OG, right?
I mean, this yes, is totally sir. Inspired by the work he did with Mogul. You know, I got yeah. to interview him right when it came out. And funny enough, he said he had always wanted to do, you know, kind of an NPR style podcast.
That's literally mm-hmm. what he said when we was talking about yeah. it at Engine Room. Mm. Because I used to be up under mm-hmm. him, like, because that was right around the time I got into podcasting, okay. yep, yep. With my first podcast, yeah. and I was just up, I'd be at Engine Room just sitting there.
Yeah. Yeah, man, I was a big fan, man. I listened every week. And when he did Mogul, you know, it just kind of opened up, you know, a whole new, like, it was a paradigm shift in podcast to me, you know, like,
absolutely.
Yeah. You know, we hip hop is storytelling. Like, let's use mm-hmm. hip hop to tell the stories of our community, of our culture, you know what I mean? In a journalistic way. And so, you know, the same way that he did that work and that we've done all of this work for the last 2 years, there's so many more stories to tell, you know, so many more, mm-hmm. you know, and kind of going back to your other question about, you know, how do we get this change to happen or what change needs to happen? All I know to do is to keep telling stories, man. You know what I mean? Because I feel like that's the only way or the best way to get, you know, get messages across and to get people to think about issues and to get people to feel like they can relate to these people that, you know, like Mac, like you were saying, that they only see as entertainers. You know what I mean? Is telling these stories and you know, there's so many more, so many stories in this season that we couldn't tell,
right?
You know, and so many more to tell on so many other topics. So, you know, the work takes a long time, and the work is never done.
Yep. And it's so
well. Listen, well,
go ahead.
Oh, go ahead.
And I'm sorry, think I said. Just on the point of the fact that we have so many stories to tell, that shows you how seismic and systemic of a problem this is. The fact that we have so many options of stories to tell, that shows you the insidious nature of these systems that we live under, right? So I think until those behaviors go,
until
exactly,
freedom,
until we still
until
got
freedom
to say, yeah.
And that was the not Nicki Minaj version, guys. Just want to let y'all know, because you know the girls go crazy.
Yeah.
No, I'm just kidding. Listen, I want to say from the bottom of my nerd heart, thank you guys for doing this.
We appreciate you. Man. We really appreciate
you. Seriously,
thank you guys. This has been literally everything we could have hoped to have been, to have you guys on here and talk about this show. Please tell the people where they can follow you, follow the show, get this show in their veins.
Yeah, we are at Louder Than a Riot on Twitter
You can catch.
Rodney showed his age. Rodney showed his age.
I'm so used to.
We on that
damn Twitter thing.
Rodney
did this shit right here. He said, "What's the real thing? We're on the
been a long day. What can I say?"
So the podcast is called Louder Than a Riot. You can find it wherever you get your podcasts, Apple, Spotify, Stitcher, YouTube even. And they drop every week at midnight Eastern in the mornings on Thursday.
Wednesday.
Yeah,
right?
Well, Wednesday night, okay. 12 a.m. Thursday. Yeah. And if anyone wants to reach us, we have a Twitter. It's called @LouderThanARiot. And if you want to tap in and email us, we're louder@npr.org.
There we go.
You mind just telling them who was the best interview you had? Not mind. You don't have.
I mean, you don't have to. Let them hear it.
Y'all have to. We know what happened. Yeah. You're welcome. No, I'm just playing. Seriously, thank you guys so much for coming
on. Man.
We're definitely gonna be tuned in. If there's anything that y'all need from our side, I mean, y'all
seriously.
Are amazing. So you
NPR,
don't need us. But
yeah.
If there is anything you need from our side, let us know. We'd love to be a part of it. Any other stories y'all doing? Let us. We'd love to be a part of any collaborative efforts. Rodney Carmichael, Sitting Mad and Louder Than a Riot. We appreciate y'all stopping by the crib. For you listeners at home, we appreciate y'all for listening. And make sure you continue to listen, subscribe, comment, and rate if you are listening on Apple Podcasts. We're going to ask you for the 5-star rating. Yep. Why? Because
we're children. I love how y'all do that. We can't say validation. That. We can't say give us 5 stars. We just say rate and review, but we really want to say 5 stars. But I respect how y'all say it.
If you listen to Louder Than a Riot, give them five stars. Why? Because they're amazing, but they're also children, and they need validation.
Come on.
Because anyone who does anything for any public consumption, we're children at heart. We need the validation to keep going. Okay? So do that for us. Also, make sure you are make sure y'all stop being lazy. Stop being cheap. Y'all come in our crib, eat our food, listen to our conversations, be all in our business, and it's for free. Y'all get 2 episodes for free. You hear us on Monday, and then y'all going to be right in our face on Thursday with nothing but lint and an empty stomach. No more. Go to the patreon.com/guysnextdoorpod. Put a little bit of snap on the petro. We got Mac and Christina, his baby mama girlfriend lady in his life.
Yep.
They just took the compatibility test, so you could go see that. We might have some new stuff with Dr. Ish over there. But make sure y'all are patrons so you don't miss the exclusive content. And also make sure you're following us on YouTube at Guys Next Door Pod. Make sure you subscribe over there. I already told y'all asses about the letters. Okay, we ain't read no letters today, so I told y'all asses about the letters. And on that note, I'm so happy that we were able to have Sid and Rodney here. Y'all better make sure y'all listen. I'm gonna keep saying it.
Seriously.
And until then, we'll see y'all black asses and white ones on Thursday.
Peace.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at hellofresh.com.
Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.